we can all think of people we've seen, artists we've seen, who sell well, whose work we don't like. And the reason they're selling well is because they have worked out how to connect their artwork with the person that's looking at it in a way that makes that person feel like their life will be better if they own that piece of art. And we can do that too. We can all do that. Hi, and welcome to episode 154 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
Say that again, Theo. I'm sorry. I just lost my train of thought.
Can we just say we're going to be talking about rather than our main topic? Topic okay. Makes me think of school projects.
Alice has to be in control of every word. Today we're going to be talking about showcasing our work online. But before we do that, and this is in answer to a listener question, but before we do that, what have you been up to this week, Alice?
Well, I can't believe Thursday's come round already, because I've been down to very wet, soggy Dartmoor, but we kind of left during the day on Saturday. We had a couple of days there. We only just got back yesterday. So not much, really, painting-wise. Zero, one might say.
How was Dartmoor, apart from wet and soggy? Did you get to go out for any walks or anything?
Wet and soggy. We had one nice walk. We got caught a break in the rain for one nice walk. But, I mean, it was relaxing to get away. But half term, Amy wants to be here for friends. So it felt like a kind of rather quick go down and go back. And longer would have been nicer. It always takes time, doesn't it, when you go somewhere to settle in a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Just readjust from one thing to the other. And we have had my membership open, was it open and closed? So it's been lovely welcoming new people into the membership. We've had one new member call, and we've got Flying Start workshop on Sunday. So I've got to get ready for that today. But it's exciting. It's really nice to see who comes in. And also, little memo for everybody, really. And I know we talk about sales and we want instant results, or we want things to be measurable. What I notice, and I'm sure you must notice this too, is that sometimes people join and I can see they've been watching for not the last round and the round before that, and now the time is right for them. And I know this happens, we know this happens, but the same is true of paintings. People watch and they wait and they watch and they wait, and when the time is right for them, time is right for them.
Exactly. Yes, I see that all the time with my course. Somebody just wrote to me the other day and said, I hope your course is running again this summer, because I've been wanting to take it the last few years but haven't been able to, but now I'm ready. So yeah, exactly. So all that, when we think, oh, I did an Instagram post and no one answered, no one bought that painting, that's not how it works. I mean, occasionally it is, but mostly it's not.
What about you?
I've been doing a lot of painting. This is always my painting time. So from November to February, March is when I'm really focusing on studio time. So that's been just the same this week, lots of painting. And I finished what I think are the last of the landscapes for my show. So they're all ready to be start varnishing and framing now.
That's your favourite bit. Not.
I know, exactly. I'm going to do it in little, I've got plenty of time, so I'm going to do it in little bits so it's not too overwhelming. I've actually done all the edges and the signing and the ceiling though. So okay. It's just a quick couple of coats of varnish and then getting help with framing. So it's not too, too bad. But I'm wondering if I'm a little bit mad, because towards the end of the paintings, I've really kind of gelled and coalesced my process to kind of combine collage and landscape in a way that I was struggling with for quite a while. And it's come together, and the last paintings I made I really, really love, and now I'm starting some new panels and they're much more abstract, and I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm just wondering if I'm nuts, because those last landscape paintings were really unusual. And why am I now just going away from that already? This is what I do. I go, yeah, okay, I did that. Great, move on. And I'm really excited about the more abstract ones I'm working on at the moment. But it does feel a little bit like, could you just settle for a while and make some more of those? I know they'd be very popular. I know I could sell them very quickly. But at the moment, I'm intrigued to move past that. So I suppose what I would tell someone else if they said this to me is, you can always go back and do more landscapes. It's not like you're saying there's no more landscapes. You're just saying, at the moment, I feel like having a go at something else. So that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. So you're saying that the collage landscapes were getting to a place that was really exciting and was kind of working. And now you feel like you've suddenly changed direction. Why did you do that?
Yeah. Although not really a change in direction, more a pushing the process even further.
Yeah.
So just removing the landscape element from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we all know that abstract landscapes are really commercially viable and people like that and it gives them something to hang, they can take a lot of crazy if it's got some semblance of something they can understand. But when you remove when it's just so crazy. But I like I say, I'm not really worried about it. It just went through my mind yesterday that why wouldn't you do some more of these then if they're working so well? And perhaps I will. I have another few months until I have to have everything finished and framed for the show. So perhaps I will. But at the moment, I've got some crazy panels going where I'm just layering collage and paint and sanding and bringing in more color. And I'm getting to understand the qualities of the different papers that I'm using, which ones will completely rip and sand when I sand them, which can be okay, which ones will refuse to be sanded and kind of create really interesting effects, which ones will sometimes, especially the old newsprint, it almost embeds in a really interesting way into the board. So it looks like an image transfer rather than collage. It's so smooth. So yeah, I'm just having some fun.
That's good. I thought you were going to say the ones you've done at the end you really love, and now you look back at some of the bigger ones that you did at the beginning of this series and you're like, oh, now I've done those and I'm stuck with them and I really want to do this, which is what often happens to me.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, but actually luckily I do really love all but about three of the ones I did at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I've got too many now. So if I want to, I can curate out those ones that I'm not so keen on now that I've done these. But there is a very clear progression from the beginning to the end where it's clear that it was moving in this direction. I don't know if that's how it will be positioned in the show. I'll have to talk to her about that. But you can definitely see it happening.
And you did larger ones and then the smaller ones at the end, didn't you, for these?
Yes. And then I went back to some medium ones right at the end as well. But yeah, the big ones, the really big ones were quite at the beginning, but they do have some of this collage element in.
Yeah.
It's just not as visible. So in the early ones, it's more subtle.
Yeah.
And in the later ones, it's more of a feature.
But and it's also easier to let collage be more of a feature on a smaller scale, I think.
Yeah. I'm now finding it's really interesting. I'm having to make my own collage papers in order to scale it up to like the 2 feet by 2 feet.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. And I'm actually also learning at the moment, or experimenting with painting my own lettering, so that only to ruin it all, only to sand it all back and destroy it. Because one of the key things for me is that I don't want any of the collage to actually be recognizable. Truly recognizable. I want tiny glimpses of something that might make sense, but then I don't want any words that you can, big words that you can read. So everything is distressed to the point of not being really clear. So I'm now working on, okay, if I want the lettering to be much bigger before I ruin it, then I'll have to hand paint it because I can't get that. Mm-hmm. I'm also thinking though about going around the shops in town and asking for posters. You know, when they get rid of all their posters and stuff.
I've tried doing that. And then in theory, it feels like a good idea. In practice, what happens is the outside paper for the outside billboards is quite really thick, quite plasticky almost, because it has to be protective from the elements. And also the colouring on it is often not, it's not that it's not what you want, because sometimes that's an interesting springboard. I have, because I've done that, and I just haven't felt turned on by
it. What about internal shop posters though?
You know, yeah, like, that could, that might
that's
work.
That's what I'm thinking, because we don't have any billboards in Skipton.
I'm trying to think what internal shop posters, like.
So, like,
I don't want any of the ones that say Morrison's bread 67p.
See, it doesn't matter for me because it's so distressed you can't tell what it says. But if it was nice bold lettering that said Morrison's bread 67p, that'd be perfect. Because if it was white on black on white, I can sand it back to the point and I can layer over so part of it's destroyed. Anyway, so that's what I'm thinking. I might go and see if I can. I've just got a horrible feeling that will end up with me with a car full of posters and shop people expecting me to come and pick things up. And if I don't get there that day, then throwing it away. But we shall see. We shall see.
Yeah.
All fun. Oh, I don't have the question this person sent, so I'm going to have to ask you to read the question.
Okay.
So moving on, we had a question about in-situ room apps, which actually led us to think it would be interesting to have a broader discussion about the way that we show our work online, the possibilities for showing work online. But Alice has the question that sparked this. So do you just want to tell us what it was?
Yeah, well, I don't actually, because I went for a run and my phone's downstairs. Oh. But it was... It was sparked by a recent post of mine that I put on Instagram. So if you want to go and have a look at it, it's at Alice Sheridan Studio. And it's one of the more recent ones with quite a light white room. And one of my newer paintings that's got quite fresh turquoise colours and light pinks and things in. And I also really liked the comment that somebody said, "What? No dark blue?" That's really funny. But the question was, can you talk at some point, I don't know where to leave messages for the podcast, can you talk some point about using room apps to show your work? So that's what we thought we'd do. So that room app that I used for that one was one called Smartist, which I have just joined because it gives you the option to show the room on an angle. You know how normally they're all square on and you have your square crop and you plop it in the middle of a square wall and there it sits. This one, you can do that and then you can kind of click the skew button and show the wall on an angle. So it looks a little bit more like a real room. And I can't remember whether it popped up in my Instagram feed, but it was on a special offer. So it was half price for the year. And I think it cost me, can't remember, $32 or £34 or something like that for a year at the offer price, which I thought was worth doing. But some of the rooms feel a little bit cold, I would say. I'm looking through them and I'm not feeling like, yeah, I'm going to use all of these, which I think is often one of the issues with these room apps. Have you found the same?
For a while, I was using Canvy, which is more expensive than that. I think we looked it up and it's about $15 a month. So I cancelled it and started to use their free rooms because you get 17 rooms a month for free. And yes, I found the same thing. I did like their rooms. They're a bit more homey than some of the ones I've seen. So they'll have throw rugs, like actually tossed rather than placed very beautifully. And they'll have maybe a bike standing against a wall and they just look a bit more natural. The other thing I like about Canvy, and they might all be like this, I don't know, but you can change the room, the wall color to anything you want. Mm-hmm. You can switch, mess about with frames. You can change sometimes the furniture to different colors or the cushions on the couch. You can actually make it coordinate nicely with what and set off what you're showing. One of the issues I found with it was quite frustrating. At the time, I was selling a series of small paintings, and there weren't very many settings where you could show a small painting because they were big settings. So I managed to find a couple that I could crop down and make something of it. But I like it. I liked doing it. I liked trying to make the best of it because I think it's important to find a way to show your work in situ. And my house is quite dark. There is really nowhere that I can show a, put a piece of work and photograph it properly. I have tried everything and there just isn't the right spot. So for me, I do need somebody else's room. Yeah. I also tried Photoshop, which I know you're quite good with Photoshop. I don't have the skills to be able to do it properly. And you've got to size it right, which these apps do for you. These apps will make the painting the right size for you without you having to do the maths to try and work it out on.
Yeah, they do. So Canvy that you're talking about is actually one that you do on your computer, isn't it, rather than on an app.
Yes. I don't like doing things on my phone. I'm old fashioned. It's too small.
Yeah. So that, but that's a big difference. You know, where actually do you feel more comfortable doing it? Yeah. Is that an inconvenience for you to have to get everything over to your computer? Or do you feel like that's good? That's a nice place to sit down and do it on a computer, on a bigger screen where I can see. And I think that that's a consideration within, with all of these. The other one that I use quite a lot is In Situ Art Room, which I think now it says is $41 for annual. I think these apps definitely have a place. And you talk about photographing within a real space. And I do that, particularly for smaller ones. And yeah, it means having a little bit of a clearer. And I've done it for bigger ones too, actually, that meant like moving the TV and like having a day where you do a little bit of room styling to get something that really feels like a home. But when we worry about paying for the cost of some of these, how much time did that take me to do? You know, that's quite a lot of time to do all of that. But I do quite like the fact then that there is a room that isn't exactly the same as the one that everybody else's room, because it's my room. But it's much difficult on a larger scale, because I really only have, I had one wall where I could really do that, because, you know, our sofa is not a new smart sofa. And it just ends up always looking kind of squishy. And we want it to look familiar and real, but you don't want it to look squishy and a bit doggy around the corners, do you? You know, which... No. You know, it's a little bit unfortunate. We get used to our houses. We, you know, we love them the way they are. But sometimes when you take a photograph of it, you realize,
yeah,
that bit's not so good. You can't just shift a wall somewhere. But yeah, I have used Photoshop in the past. And what I have done often is taken a photograph of, particularly if you're working at regular consistent sizes, take a photograph of one painting at that size. So all the shadows and everything are completely natural. You've taken the time to get it lit once. And then all you have to do is just superimpose, much like you would do in any of these apps, just superimpose a new image if you're making paintings that are a consistent size over the top of it. So that's something else I quite like. And if you don't want to do it in your own room, another place to look would be on a place called Creative Marketplace, and look for wall mock-ups or room mock-ups. And you can buy layered Photoshop files where you can do all of those things that you say, change the color of the wall, but you do need to either have access to Photoshop and understand how to use it, because the learning curve on that is a little bit steeper for
But and I think the key thing, I do like it when I see people put their stuff in real rooms. Like I say, for me, just light wise and everything, it's just not proven very effective. The other problem with it might be for some people, and it is for me, that I often haven't framed them at the point they're going up on my website. So unless you've framed everything beforehand, then these apps are good, because you can put a frame on, and yes, it doesn't look entirely real, but it's enough to give a buyer an idea of what that's going to look like when they either you're never going to frame it and they're going to frame it, or when you do send it to them framed. That's only if, like in my case, I always use a simple tray frame, either wood or white. So that means I can easily mock it up on there. If you have more complex, say a St. Ives frame or something, you might not be able to mock that up on those apps because they won't have that option. But it does give you, I just think the key thing is, it's one way, when we take a picture of our painting, that's not what it looks like. I always find photos of my paintings frustrating because when I see it, it's got space around it. And when it's the photograph, it's got no space around it. And so when you just have a website, which I used to have, which is just the painting, that doesn't give buyers any kind of idea of what that might look like or what size it is. And even when you tell them, it's hard to visualize. So I think that's why it's so good.
Yeah, most people don't get out a tape measure and check. So
no,
astonishingly, really, particularly for a big piece. And, you know, we're not always very good at estimating size. So if you've got something that gives a visual sense of scale, it's hugely important.
Yeah. And it gives you also a context. And I think that's why these apps are good, but they're just a piece of what's available to us when we're showcasing paintings online. And I was on someone's website the other day, and sadly, I cannot remember who, but you know how in Squarespace websites and in some WordPress websites, you'll have a main image of a painting and then several other options, might be a close-up, might be in situ. And this artist also had a video in one of those boxes.
That's
when
nice.
You clicked on it, it was just a handheld camera video, and she was scanning over the painting and just saying and talking a little bit about it. It was like a minute long. But I thought, oh, that's a good idea that I'd like to take on board and maybe do, because I remember you doing an Open Studios by video where you went round and did that. And it was really effective because you hear the artist's enthusiasm for their own work, which is very catching.
That's a really good point, actually. And as you say, it doesn't have to be long.
No.
But it brings it to life in a totally new way. And if there is a problem with those apps, is that it can, while the aim is to show in situ and close the gap, if you don't choose them and use them carefully, and I often, even in the bigger rooms, crop in a little bit more, so cut some of the room out a bit so that the focus really is on the painting, because there's a clinical element to them that can be distancing, which is the exact opposite of what we're trying to create. So with the framings, for example, I very rarely use their frames. I always wait till the painting is photographed and then photograph it with the frame. And drop that in, and then always have a close-up of the actual frame as well, because otherwise it's just an approximation. And I think if you're buying something online, you want to see the whole point is you want to see what it is you're really getting, not a fabricated version of it. And sometimes I see where people have chosen a room which isn't really complementary necessarily to the way that they're working.
Yes.
And it sets up a little bit of a, what, I don't know what the word is. It's just a little bit of friction, isn't it? Because you kind of feel like it just feels on edge. And it's just a tiny little bit where you think, no, that painting's not right in that room. And you don't want anybody thinking that when they're looking at those things. Because that's like defeating the object.
Yeah. They should be thinking, wow. I've also seen instances where the room is so amazing that it overwhelms the painting.
Yeah, it's like, well,
I want that house.
Yeah.
I want the house overlooking the ocean with giant windows, and in the corner there's a painting on the wall. Oh, I don't even care about the painting.
Or even, oh yeah, well, of course that painting looks good in that room because that's amazing, but I don't have a room or a house anywhere like that.
Yes, which is where it's nice to do the realistic if you can, and the real in a real setting if you can, or why it's nice to find a room that looks as real as possible rather than the really glamorous ones. And my real bugbear sorry to anyone who's done this, but please don't put it in an art gallery with a bench in front of it and a person sitting looking at it, especially if you make it five times as large as it really is, when, because it just feels like that is not going to sell a painting to anyone. No. It's not going to fool them into thinking it was in an art gallery, and it's not going to make them be able to envisage it in their own home. It's fine to do for fun if you're messing about on Instagram, but it's not good for putting it on your website as a showcase in a painting.
I think because in a very subtle way, actually what it does is undermine somebody's trust in you. And
yeah.
You know, when if we're buying something online, we want to feel as confident as we can. We're still buying something. We're paying a lot of money for something that we haven't seen in reality yet. And even if there's a sense of there is a degree of fabrication here, am I going to get what I paid for? Is this going to be as good as it looks? Have they also like tweaked up the color and the contrast, or what else has been done to this image?
Yeah.
And I think it's your responsibility to make it look good, but it's got to be as accurate as possible. And for smaller pieces in particular, and I think this is where there is an advantage, is that often, and we talked about this recently, often when we start, we are naturally working smaller. Many people start working smaller, and it's not that hard. Like, it takes a little bit of time, but I've cleared off like the surfaces of chest of drawers or a fireplace, and been around the house and gathered a vase or, you know, stack of books that have got nice spines, and propped a piece up in that situation, and got my lights and plugged them in and found extension leads. And God, yeah, that's boring, but it's a day. And if you're going to sell work and you're ready for it, it's definitely worth doing that. The issue has come for me, and when I first started using these room apps, was when I started to work larger, because it is harder to find the space in reality for that. And then, yeah, it's really tempting to go for those huge, great big spaces, but it's not where we live. It's not where we live.
Yeah.
It doesn't help. So
I think as well, I want to talk a little bit about words, because we're talking about in situ apps because someone asked us, but I really, really believe like a lot of the strength of that video that I saw about the painting was what the artist was saying. When you toured around your open studios, it was what you were saying. Sometimes the videoing was clunky because you were hand holding as you walked around, but that doesn't matter. It's what you're expressing. And so I think either audio, so for example, videoing your work and talking about it, or even audio, it could just be audio playing with the painting, or written words that tell a story. In the end, this is about sales. And I was reminded the other day, I was listening to something non-art related and a podcast, and the guy was saying quality has nothing to do with sales. You have to get out of that mindset. You can have something really high quality that doesn't sell, and you can have something mediocre that flies off the shelves. And the difference is the sales talk. And as artists, because we're not comfortable with that idea, I think we can often tend to play our stuff down. Like the work will speak for itself. I'll just show you the painting, and if you like it, you'll buy it. But we can all think of people we've seen, artists we've seen who sell well, whose work we don't like, whose work we don't think is very good. And the reason they're selling well is because they have worked out how to connect their artwork with the person that's looking at it in a way that makes that person feel like their life will be better if they own that piece of art. Mm. And we can do that too. We can all do that. But if you go on a tour of artists' websites, generally that won't be happening. And I think that's where we really miss an opportunity. So just telling the story of what the painting means to you, or the series, what it's about, and really expressing how much you love it, that's a key thing. Mm. Because if you don't even love it, why should I think it'll be any? You're the artist. You must really love it. I want to hear that and feel it. And I do think that makes a big difference. We talked about how titles make a difference, but I think the copy that goes on the website with the painting, if it just says 24 by 24 framed in a tray frame on acrylic on canvas, that doesn't grab me. The painting might have grabbed me, but I would have been pushed over the edge by reading this. And I'll share something in What's Inspired where something pushed me over the edge to want to own something. But it's just that connection. We need to make that connection. It's hard online, but then again, it's easier online because you've got all these, you've got audio and video and copy, and you can't always do that in a quick conversation at an art fair. But now you've got the 360 degree experience or whatever that you can put together online.
I think there's a few things in here, isn't there, which is that people buy for all sorts of different reasons, and you can do your best to touch many of them without killing yourself by having to do it all. But there are definitely things that we can all do better, because actually what you're selling when you're selling a painting or a print is it's more than just a commodity. It's more than just something that's going to cover a patch on a wall. It's the experience. It's how that person thinks about themselves because they've made that decision. It's all of those kind of things that go into it too. And I know, listening to you talk about that, that I know that I have been guilty of all of the things that you say we have to do. And way back when, I think I wrote a post about, right, the painting's finished, that's it then. And there was a blog post about like how many things you have to do when a painting is finished. And often the last part of it is putting it up on your website. And you're like, I have edited, you know, if you've got 10 paintings and you've got close-ups and corners and in situ shots, I have done and I have edited 40 images and I've done descriptions and I've done product things. And now you want me to write an essay about each one? Are you mad?
I do want an essay, just a short paragraph.
No, but like, and different things about each of them. And you know it, but at that stage, you're almost past that level of creativity with the painting, and you're often up against a deadline, and it's easy to skimp that. And I think I have been guilty of that in the past, but it's never too late to go back and change it.
Yeah, I certainly was guilty of it at the beginning because I didn't realize. I certainly was. Same thing. I would just put the size. That's why I know it's a problem, because I would do it too. Yeah. But what I've discovered in that my last sets of paintings that I've released is what a difference the story's making. Yeah. And even to the point of something I know you do, making a landing page. If you're launching a collection of things all at once, this is, but to make a landing page and tell the story of the overall collection on that landing page and make it a private landing page with a private view for people on your mailing list, so it feels exclusive, and not share that landing page with everyone else. I'm really looking forward to when I have the exhibition, I'm hoping to make a video of everything in situ in the gallery, because that will be true, that it is in that space. And it'll be nice to be able to show that to people on a private view online. So you can't come to the gallery, but you can still experience the exhibition. And here's, you know, I'm going to look into those 3D apps as well. I don't know if I can do that, where you can do a tour around.
I'm not in love with those.
I love those.
For me, that makes me feel like that's another, that's more of a technology distancing barrier. It doesn't actually make me feel closer to the work or the story behind the work. I get into, how do I make this camera move? Where am I doing? And I kind of forget about the paintings. Whereas some of the other things that we're talking about, or like you're just like making a video or talking quickly about each painting, that closes the gap for me. Yeah. Whereas I think some of those
I really like those. I've actually bought paintings from doing those. Yeah, I really like
it. You can't tell, can you?
Get up close. But anyway, so those are the just finding ways, whatever ways suit you, to tell that story. I can see, if you do the 3D tour and there's no video, the video, I'm able to either put music on and you guide the camera around, or you talk, which I prefer the talking actually, and explaining the different things. Whereas the 3D app is just you on your own looking around. So it's like having an audio, like those places where you can get headphones and walk around and someone talks in your ear. It would be like that. The video would be more like that, which I think would be nice. But yeah, it's all these different ways. And I'm sure there's things we are not thinking of ways to tell that story. And I totally get the thing of not wanting to do the writing. And I almost think, I don't know, because I don't know the cost of this, but I wonder if it's worth it. If you're launching a collection of paintings and you really don't like writing, is it worth it to pay someone to do the writing for you? You talk to them, they write the paragraph for you, because I think it's that powerful in terms of selling someone to write the page for you. If you went to a really high-end copywriter, you'd be talking thousands and thousands of pounds, but you don't have that. You might have a friend who's a good writer. You might know someone who can just put things into words that you can't do. I just happen to find that very easy. So that part for me is just like talking. I'll just tell you about this painting, I'll write it down, and that's that. But maybe you know someone who can do that. I think it's worth getting extra help with that. Or maybe another artist friend in a group you belong to.
Yeah, or having a Zoom call like this and recording it and then writing down what you said afterwards, because in conversation often it comes more naturally than it does sitting writing. Yeah. I think that's a little bit of a trick way in. But I suppose that a couple of things that I would like to say is that, you know, all of these things, so the apps are one part of it. They are just a tool though. So, you know, pick one. If you're not using one yet, pick one you like and add it in. Don't worry about £34 for a year. Because if that's going to help you sell a painting, that is so worth it. If you want to look for other ways of doing it, there are ways that you can do it if you're prepared to spend a little bit of time, get the lighting, do it yourself, get the photographs in. But you've got to weigh up those two options. But I really like this idea of being able to go back and layer up. So even if you've got things already, go back to them. So if, say, you're in a hurry and you've just got one main image of a painting, go back, add in some alternate photographs, add in some different viewpoints, write a little bit more of the story. Never too late.
Yeah.
Too late.
Now, we have a listener question, Alice, and it's kind of on the same vein, but different. It's from Esther. Esther's an artist. She loves the podcast. I sound like Steve Wright in the afternoon. He always says, love the show. But she said, I'm about to hang a piece of my own art on my wall, and what's bothering me is it doesn't match the couch. And she says, I know, I've even said to myself, art doesn't have to match the couch, but I can't help thinking how lovely it would be if this passionate expression of myself at least coordinated with the rest of the room. So here's the question. Why doesn't art have to match the couch? What does that even mean? And why does my own artistic heart wish that my art did match?
Oh, can I do the last one?
Yes.
Okay. The last one. Why does my own artistic heart wish that my art did match? I don't think that's what you're totally getting at. I think what you're getting at is that you've created something in your art, as you say, this passionate expression of myself that you recognize, and your house doesn't reflect that. You've got to change your house, Esther. Got to change your house. Got to, you know, I'm not joking. I did this, and you can see me on a really early video after I took Nick Wilton's CVP course. I realized how many other areas of my life I was sort of playing a little bit safe in, and I started decorating my house in a different way. So much more fun.
Yeah.
Like making bolder decisions, choosing stronger colors, you know, going for something that was a little bit way out there. And all of a sudden, you know, the character kind of came into it. Whereas beforehand, when we'd finished, the builders had finished, it was like, oh, just paint it all off white and be done with it. It's clear, it's spacious, that's enough. But actually, when you're starting to put a lot of you into your art, you want to see it in other places that you live in. And I think that's what's happening here. I don't think that it's not that the art matches that's irritating you, as in, is it the same colour or anything like that? I think that there's a feeling that's in the art that you don't have in your house yet, because you did your house, I don't know, whenever you decorated that room, but that was you a while ago. So I would say, judge up what you've got in that room
to match the painting.
Yeah. Like, which, if it's something exciting, you know, what is it? You know, what do you want to do? Do you want a new rug? Do you want, you know, do you want some fiery color lampshades? Doesn't have to be the whole thing, but something else that makes that painting feel part of a room that is this beautiful, recognizing, expressive place of you to go into at the end of the evening.
And I actually have a story about this, because I bought a painting from Alice which had some quite vivid greens in it, and it just wasn't going anywhere in the house. And I know we say don't buy art to match the couch. I think what we mean by that is you don't just go looking for, oh, my couch is red, so I need a red painting. Oh, there's one, that'll do. But when you put a painting in a room and it really clashes, it doesn't do any, it doesn't do the painting any good, and it doesn't do the room any good. Mm-hmm. And so my solution was, at first I hung your painting in a hallway where it did coordinate with this kind of quiet green that we had on the walls. But then I just thought, oh no, I'm just going to decorate. I'm going to do exactly what you just said. I'm going to make the walls match this painting, or not match, but showcase this painting. So I picked this brilliant, I love this color, I can't even remember what it is now, but it's like a really muted but dark green. And I put it on two of the walls, and one of the walls it's on is where your painting hangs. And now that painting, just, you walk in the room and it's the first thing you notice, because it's really showcased it. So I actually would repaint or change things to match the painting, rather than buy the painting that matches what I've got. And I know if the couch is an expensive thing to replace, so that might not be practical. But I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to showcase the art, is what I'm saying. But I think where that saying comes from, don't buy a painting to match the couch, is don't just go looking for something that's the same colours as your room and then buy it, whatever it is.
Yeah, so that's an issue of, and maybe I think the question, we've answered a different question, but Esther's question almost is like, should art be coordinated, you know? And actually, I'll tell you who's just done a good thing on this. You can go and find it on her website, Kasia Clark, C-A-S-I-A, Clark with an E. And she's got a download, which is basically, you know, how much should your painting match your decor or not. I like paintings to have a little bit of an edge that makes them a bit different from the space that they're sitting in. I think if it's too matchy-matchy, then it starts to look like you've just bought it all from Next.
No, exactly. Like yours is lots of lime greens, and this is a totally different green. I think it's the difference between matching the cushions and the paintings would feel too, well, for us, I mean, everybody do whatever you want. But for me, it would feel too matchy. But I do want to showcase the paintings.
Yes.
I do want to make them look as good as they can look, just the way a gallery would. That's why galleries will maybe paint a whole wall a dark grey, or and then for the next exhibition change it to white, because they want to make that particular artwork look as good as it can look.
Yeah, and it's about mood, isn't it? I mean, I've got certain paintings that I've bought that work brilliantly in our bedroom or in a dining room, and some that would, you know, they are only suitable for rooms where I want to have a particular feel to them. And maybe some could move from the bedroom to the dining room, but the ones that are in the dining room, I wouldn't want to have in our bedroom, for example. They've just got a different presence to them.
Yeah.
I think that's what's really going on here. But it's a good question.
It is a good question, Esther. I hope we helped. So on to our final segment. What's inspired you this week, Alice?
Right, well, I've got a little bit of a proposal for you that we need to talk about afterwards, because I have been listening to a book called Alchemy by Rory Sutherland, who was, I don't know what his job role is, but basically he was part of the huge advertising company Ogilvy for decades. And the premise of the book is about over-reliance on logical thinking, and how actually we make more creative decisions, we open up our minds when we look to the illogical and allow space for that, and that too much of life today is led by we were listening in the car and my husband said he really doesn't like economists, does he? And I said, well, I'm not sure that he doesn't like economists, but he's pretty clear that actually if you only look at life through that lens, on lenses and things that can be measured and statistical, A leads to B, you're missing out on a huge amount. And it's a really interesting book. He reads it. It's a nice book to listen to on Audible, but I've also just ordered the hard copy because almost every little chunk I'm going, oh, this is kind of like sparking off ideas. This means I could do it this way instead of this way. So it's a non-art book, but it's a really nice book for encouraging just having a different take on things. So I was thinking, how about you buy it? And every so often we can do a little section about what about this in the book, like a online. Okay. But you've got to have a listen first and tell me if you might listen and go, oh, no, this is not chiming at all. That wouldn't be fair.
That sounds like it would suit me, don't
it? Yeah, it's good.
Mine is, I just finished editing something last night, an interview that I recorded for my membership group. And I finished editing last night and I was tired and grumpy yesterday. And when I finished the editing, I was so upbeat and inspired and grateful for my life that I wanted to share this artist with you all. Her name is June Shapter, S-H-A-P-T-E-R. And June was a student on, I think, my second course, just like the first year I was really doing it properly. She was a student on the course. And she was one of the people, she was like one of my flagship students, because she just got what I was saying. And she just blossomed into this amazing creativity. And she's a joy because she loves her art making. She does it every day. She does all sorts. She goes wherever it leads her. She works purely intuitively. She makes wonderful, beautiful pieces. And during the conversation, speaking of purchasing things when you connect with them, she was showing me something that she'd made. She got inspired by going in a charity shop and finding some children's building blocks. And she thought, oh, I could work on those. And she works in painted collage. She hand makes her own collage papers now. And then she makes paintings or whatever out of the collage papers. But she decided to collage over these cubes. And they worked out so well, it became an obsession. So she just was hunting for stackable cubes wherever she went and turning them into artworks. And she held some up while we were talking. And I thought they were really moving and I've got them here, so hang on. I can show Alice and the rest of you will have to imagine. But there's a different painting on each side of these cubes. And I said, oh, I really like those. And then she told me, oh, yeah, I made these about my best friend who died. This is about her. And, of course, one of my closest friends died last year. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I was like, right, I have to have those cubes. And I didn't know if she was going to sell them or not, but I said, please, if you're going to sell them, will you sell them to me? And it was the connection between her experience and mine that was the tipping point for me wanting to own them. But anyway, I just would like to say that June, her Instagram feed is so inspiring because you have never seen anyone create as much and as creatively as June, and she writes really well about it too. So you can find her on Instagram at June Shapter Art. So it's again June and then S-H-A-P-T-E-R Art on Instagram, and I think you'll thank me.
Yeah, that sounds lovely. It's great, isn't it? That's just a lovely rounded story.
Yeah. While you're looking for June on Instagram, you can also pop over and find either of us on Instagram Alice is, what's your Instagram, Alice? I always forget.
At Alice Sheridan Studio.
And I am at Louise Fletcher _art. Come over, say hi, let us know that you listen. It's always lovely to hear from you. In the meantime, we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye. Twice now. Why do I do that? I start to talk and I go choke myself.